Earlier this week, we watched in horror as Notre Dame Cathedral went up in flames. Tourists and locals alike stood outside looking on, weeping and praying and singing. First responders battled to hold back the flames. It seemed like the whole world was watching, hoping against hope something would be saved, fearing the whole structure was lost. After the fire was put out, we held our breath until we could learn what part of that magnificent building had survived. Was the rose window intact? Did the organ survive unscathed? The bells, the statues? What about the relics considered by the faithful to be the cathedral's most precious treasures? The relics supposed to be from the crown of thorns and the cross itself. Of all the images coming out of that scene, one stood out to me. Maybe you saw it. It was an image of the cross inside the cathedral, standing tall in the midst of the ashes and the ruin, the smoke rising around it. It's an image that believer and skeptic alike recognize is significant. But why? What is it about the cross? We're so familiar with it as a Christian symbol, we don't often stop to think about how strange it is that it's become imbued with such meaning for us. You see, the crucifixion of Jesus was not an event with an obvious meaning at the time. This was not a precious moment or a family service. For many bystanders, this was just another criminal executed by the government. Like it or not, that was the government. For Pilate, just an occasion where his own self-interest won over his desire to do the opposite of what the Jewish leaders wanted him to do. He might have said, well, that was strange, and gone back to bed. For the Jewish leaders, the cross meant they were safe again. They could say, whew, glad that's over, and go back to their Passover preparations. For Mary, it was world-ending. For the women and the other disciples gathered at the foot of the cross, disaster. No one who witnessed the crucifixion at the time, in the moment, at noon on Good Friday, no one thought it was redemptive. It was a strange thing for the early church to preach the cross, to preach Jesus crucified. As Paul writes, it sounded foolishness, absurd. There's an ancient piece of graffiti in Rome that pictures someone worshiping at the feet of a crucified figure who has the body of a man and the head of a donkey. And the caption reads, Alexamenos worships his God, literally portrayed as asinine. And the cross sounds strange in our context, too. Our neighbors may be like Jesus the teacher, but Jesus crucified? The violence of it seems gratuitous and grotesque. As one Buddhist leader puts it, the crucifixion is a very painful image to me. It does not contain joy or peace, and this does not do justice to Jesus. Marie Kondo might say it doesn't spark joy and throw it out. On the flip side, if we're honest, in our media and in our movies, we've seen worse violence than this. The cross is both foreign to us, and yet we're overfamiliar with it. The cross would have been a familiar sign to those living in the Roman Empire as what happens to those who defy Rome. For us, it's mainly something we've seen in church or on necklaces. Those living in the shadow of Rome would have seen a cross and shuddered. When we see it, we most likely have no reaction at all. We just think, Christian, church. Then there's the particularity of the cross. How can one brown body suffering through this very culturally particular unjust execution thousands of years ago have anything to do with me? The disciples couldn't see the meaning of the cross until after the resurrection. And then they found they had to use image after image, passage after passage, to try to make it plain what the meaning of the crucifixion was for us. No one explanation or metaphor can cover it, certainly not one sermon. Now, you've heard many of these motifs preached and taught. Christ dying as a once-for-all sacrifice for sin. Christ dying in our place, paying the price for sin we should have paid. God and Christ doing battle with the powers and emerging victorious, just to name a few. And with all these excellent and powerful metaphors for what Jesus accomplished on the cross, sometimes we forget that the most basic symbolism of the cross, the plain meaning of the cross, if you will, is death. Suffering, humiliation, condemnation, death. This is a night when we can't get around death as much as we would like to. But there is no resurrection without death. So tonight I want us to dare to hear the word of death in the cross so that we can be ready to embrace the strange word of life. Now this feels dangerous to us. It feels like walking on the edge of a canyon in the dark. It feels like we'll plummet to places we don't want to go. But we must dare. So when we dare to look at the cross, this symbol of death, what do we find? First, the cross condemns. We cannot hear the good news of the cross until we've taken in the full depth of the bad news. This is not a feel-good message. The cross condemns the powers that keep going with violence and injustice. In the Passion narrative, we see the powers show up in the person of Pilate. They were the occupiers oppressing the people of God. They didn't care about truth, only about power. Just as Pilate was only concerned about saving his own skin, not saving an innocent life. In the person of Pilate, we see that the cross stands in judgment over all those who are godless, worshiping their own self-interest. But Pilate was not the only one who sent Jesus, the innocent one, to death. The religious leaders were those crying, "Crucify." The cross condemns the godly, too. Those who loved their religion, but didn't recognize the Messiah when he showed up in the flesh. See, we could understand the cross condemning those who live violent lives and commit injustice, those we easily name as unbelievers. The hardest thing to grasp is that the cross also condemns those of us who feel we're basically good people. And yet on the cross, as Fleming Rutledge puts it, perfect righteousness was consigned to nothingness by an unholy collusion of the godly and the ungodly. The cross condemns the godly and the ungodly alike. You see, human godliness, like human sin, ends at the cross. The powers that seem so seductive end in the cross. Our best attempts at self-improvement, at being better people, our continual belief that we can somehow get better on our own, the cross condemns these. The cross says there is no path to life that doesn't first run through death. When we hear that word of condemnation in all its starkness and despair, only then can we fully realize the truth that only God can rescue us. The cross condemns. Second, the cross stands. I come back to that image of the cross standing in the middle of the ashes of Notre Dame. The cross stands tall wherever there are ashes. The cross stands wherever there is death and destruction. On the killing fields of Cambodia and the blood-soaked fields of Rwanda, the cross stands. In the gas chambers of Auschwitz and the bombed churches of Louisiana, the cross stands. In our own deepest losses and deaths and pain, in the middle of our sleepless nights, the cross stands. The cross stands to tell us Jesus is here. The cross stands to tell us there can be life on the other side of this, but only because of me. in the novel by Susan Howitch, Ultimate Prizes. It's right after World War II. And the protagonist, who's an English priest, finds himself serving as a chaplain for German POWs held near his home. Not a popular or easy task, as you can imagine. And one of the Germans he meets is struggling to keep any faith in God. This prisoner had lost his entire family when the Allies bombed Dresden. His question for the priest is, to be locked up indefinitely, to be cut off from one's loved ones, to be hated and despised by one's jailers, how does one go on believing in God in a world where God is absent? The priest doesn't have an easy answer, but he keeps going back to be with the man. And at some point, he tells the prisoner about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, whose faith was not destroyed even when he was imprisoned and then hanged by Hitler. And as the prisoner thought about it, a light went on, and he said, if God can be with Bonhoeffer on the scaffold, he'll be in Dresden among the ruins. And he pauses to search for the right English words, but at last he declares, he's a crucified God, sharing our Good Friday. The priest reflects to himself, Easter Day was as yet unimaginable, but perhaps it always was unimaginable to the man on the cross enduring Good Friday. The cross stands wherever, in the words of Rutledge, there are evils that cannot be redressed by any means this world has to offer, telling us that Jesus is there. The cross stands. And finally, the cross calls. The cross calls us to die that we might live. When we finally realize there's nothing we can do to make ourselves right, to make the world right, when we feel the depths of the despair and the ruin of Good Friday, that very moment of despair is the same moment when we can be truly rescued, when we cry out to God, help, save us. There's no possibility of resurrection unless there has been death. You see, the cross calls us to die to the things we've relied on to feel okay. Money, success, relationships. It calls us to reject power and prestige and wealth as the things that bring happiness, to reject success as the sign of faithfulness. The cross calls us to die to our own self-interest and live for the interests of others, from birth to death, as Jesus did. And if we are honest, if I am honest, we want the resurrection. We do not want the cross. We want to be well. We do not want the chemotherapy. We want to pray for people to know Jesus without risking the shame of actually telling them about Jesus. We want to be liked. We do not want to risk relationship in order to call out truth. The cross condemns us all so that God might have mercy on us all. The cross stands in the midst of injustice, proclaiming the crucified and resurrected Jesus. The cross calls to us tonight to die so that we might live. The cross remains strange to us, and yet strangely powerful. We don't have to fully understand it to embrace it, and to embrace the one who loved us even unto death. For the cross also reminds us that in the middle of the cross, suffering and dying for us is God himself. God giving himself for us. God taking all our sin and shame and violence on himself. You see, apart from God, the cross would only mean death, would only mean death to us. But in the power of God, the cross has become the most powerful word imaginable of love. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son so that whoever believes in him, whoever looks up to the cross and cries, help, shall not die, but receive the fullest, fullest life. Thanks be to God.